You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Actually, Maggie's not here. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm guest hosting along with my favorite guest co-host, Angela Lang, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And you can join the conversation anytime by phone or by text. The number for both is 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842 or 855-75-CIVIC. And it was great to have Representative Robin Vining on the show with us the last half hour. And now we have another political figure here in Wisconsin that I have tremendous respect for. Former state rep Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point, who is now executive director of a group called Rust Belt Rising. Representative Shanklin, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Hey, you just had a birthday yesterday. What do you do for fun in celebration?
I went out to lunch at a local diner with my mom and caught up, which was amazing. And then for dinner, I got to meet up with my husband and we went to Wapaka at Clearwater Harbor and just enjoyed time near the lake. It was wonderful. Thank you.
You and Angela have birthdays around the same time. So there you go. Tell us what Rust Belt Rising is and how you got associated with it.
Absolutely. So I was in the state legislature in Wisconsin for six terms, 12 years. My term finished, last term finished in January. I had also made a bid for the third congressional district, didn't make it in the primary. And so I was looking for an opportunity to make a difference and continue to make a difference in a way that, helps people like Democratic candidates who support our working families and seniors gain power and learn how to use it in a way that transforms generations, right? So that changes the course of history. And not to be too hyperbolic, but I really believe that all of us working on elections and the democratic infrastructure, the training infrastructure, and the policy component in government, we're all doing that right now. We know that we are at a very pivotal time in our nation's history. We know that the midterms are the most powerful check we have until the next presidential election. And that everything we do from now until then on the state level, on the local level, and on the federal level can make a huge impact. And so as executive director, my goal and job is to help Democratic candidates, campaign staff, activists, civic and party leaders learn how to really message authentically and genuinely to folks, to show them not only whose side we're on, the side of working people, but to beyond that, use that power for good. And so, as somebody who's always been a huge proponent of labor unions and organizing, this felt like the perfect fit for me. I grew up in a small rural town in north central Wisconsin, Wittenberg, population 1,000. And I represented a very rural area, 19 small towns and villages outside of Stevens Point in Portage County, which is a purple county. So I wanted to take my experience learning how to not only get elected, but use my power that I did have, the power of the pulpit, the press release, right? Organizing and co-leading in coalition with groups, whether it's, groups who care about clean water or groups who care about public education funding. And that experience that I have, you can't put a price tag on real world lived experience. And so many candidates need that. They need somebody who's been through it. And so I was chosen to be the new executive director. And my goal is to train hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of folks over the next 2 years, and hopefully again the next cycle, within our six state regions. We have Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Indiana, and Ohio.
And this is a crucial region for Democrats, especially at the presidential level, because we saw what happened in the last presidential race, but also for statewide politics here. And, I've been, in the communication business myself in my career, and we're always trying to give each other messaging tips. What messaging tips do you give your candidates, your clients?
Yeah, so we just had an amazing session today with Joe Zepecki, whose name probably a lot of folks who are listening know. He just
good
ran
friend
for
of mine.
Democratic Party chair. He's an amazing messenger, and I think even better, just an incredible person, right? Those who know him love him. He will do anything for anyone. And we're so excited to have him. He's serving as a mentor for our candidates as well. And he did, his five M's. The medium is the message. The messenger is the message. The mood is the message, which I think is incredibly important, how you get your message out to the masses, right? And so my tip, and we brought this up over and over again today throughout our trainings, is showing up authentically is the most important, right? Trying to be someone you're not, trying to mimic another politician isn't going to work. And so there are no magic words, right? We're not going to give anyone a script and say, read these words and voters will love you. That's just not true. Voters can smell BS from a mile away, right? Mm-hmm. What they want to hear first and foremost is, hey, this is who I am. I want to know about you. Okay. Just a brief introduction, maybe a story. The storytelling narrative is really important. Why you're running for office, what you're going to do when you get there. But I think the most important question that candidates need to be able to answer at every door and at every meeting is, who are you? Why do you want to run? And what are you going to do for me? Right. That piece is the most important. If you can't answer that, don't run. So we're working on that, you know, helping candidates identify, you know, most people have a story about their why, right? Maybe they have a disability and they are furious about the Medicaid cuts. Maybe they personally rely on food stamps and are furious about the SNAP cuts. Whatever the situation, they have a story that they can tell. And our goal is to help them tell it as authentically as possible, while also showing working people and working families who they are running for. And that's them. You know, the Democratic Party, for decades, the brand was the party of working people, the home of working people. And Rust Belt Rising recognizes that in the Rust Belt, right, in these six states especially, these states have become tremendously competitive and swing and battleground states, especially in these congressional districts in all six states, because of the kind of post-industrial economy we're seeing, where, you know, these good working people who lost their union jobs with a pension and health care, you know, they're looking for a new job in their community and can't find it anymore, right? And we're now reckoning with AI and other things too. You know, we're seeing new trends potentially repeating the same history if, you know, we don't have a plan. And so we want candidates to be able to speak to those folks. And that means reaching out to folks beyond the base, right? There are many people, if you look at the 2024 election, we lost margins, significant margins, with almost every voting demographic, in some cases massively. And so what does that mean? We need to operate with humility. The Democratic Party has a problem, not the voters. It's the party. It's the people in it. It's the candidates. And we are empowering them. Instead of making people feel bad about it, hey, let's operate with humility, listen to folks first, and do something about it.
You mentioned the mood is the message. Explain that a little more.
Yeah, this is Joe's, and I love it. I was thinking a lot about it while he was talking about it. And I do think, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, in the 2024 election, when folks were defending institutions, which, you know, I believe strongly in, you know, whether it's public media or whether it's our civic employees, whether it's, you know, federal government oversight organizations like the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau, right? Those are important. But if folks only hear about how, well, I just want government to do this, and we just need to get government back to doing XYZ, the status quo, they're like, well, I am against the establishment right now. The majority of Americans, over 60%, regardless of race, regardless of where they live, regardless of if they're Democrat, Republican, or independent, all agree right now that both our political and economic systems are failing us. They want to start over. So if you are the pro-establishment, pro-institution, pro-defend the status quo candidate, who's going to win? The burn it to the ground guy, the I don't like what he says all the time, but he's going to start us over. And that's unfortunate. I'm not saying we need to be like him, but I am saying we can learn something from it. We need to be the, hey, big pharma shouldn't have a chokehold on our federal government. We're going to lower prescription drug costs, period. That kind of candidate, right? And you can do that in a red district, a bright blue district, or a purple district and be successful.
Speaking with Representative former state rep Katrina Shanklin, who's now executive director of a group called Rust Belt Rising, trying to help Democrats message better and govern better with power and not be afraid of their power. Angela, I'm sorry, you have a question.
No. I was going to say, I just want to build off of a similar question that I asked Representative Vining about the kind of this idea, and building off what you just mentioned, that like people want these basic things. And there sometimes is this idea that you need to sacrifice your political values or your political messaging in order to win. And I also think about young people, specifically when it comes to you, because one of the first times I remember meeting you, I was a part of an organization called United Counties. council and, you know, this idea of young people being engaged in this conversation. So I'm really curious to get your thoughts on how folks kind of message either to young people or any more of a progressive base while understanding the political climate that we're in. And, you know, sometimes people feel that they need to make these sacrifices in order to be progressive, so to speak, later.
Yeah. Yeah, I reject that frame completely. And here's why. I have, you know, if you look at my voting record as somebody who was in office for 12 years, you know, I voted against budgets that people probably should have told me I should have voted for. And, you know, but I said, look, you know, my property taxes are going up. So are everyone else's. And our schools aren't getting the money they need. And I was clear about my vote and I didn't have to defend it because I advertised it early. I think how you hold your political capital and how you spend it is really important. Lots of politicians hoard their power. They like guard it zealously, regardless of party, right? Like they're like dragons sitting on it. Like I'll use it all one day. And they retire and they missed out on hundreds potentially of opportunities to spend that political capital. And so I would say, you know, I ran TV ads, digital ads, mailers, and radio ads of Republicans, independents, and Democrats supporting me in my elections. I also outperformed the top of the ticket in every election that I ran for assembly. So I have data points that show people knew I was a progressive. They knew that I was running on things like, you know, I was on a public option bill for Badger Care. I strongly believe in it, was campaigning on it. I didn't shy away from it. I said, I think people should be able to buy in, period. There should always be a public option when it comes to healthcare so people can afford to have cancer treatments and to, you know, go to the doctor when they feel sick without worrying about going bankrupt, right? And I do think that it's a value, right? Like whatever your value is, you know, Rust Belt Rising trains all Democrats, centrists, moderates, progressives, whatever your value is, be authentic to it and show that you're open to having conversations. You know, I have changed people's minds by talking about a public option. Every time I met with a healthcare insurance company or hospital, I brought up a public option and I said, I'm going to use my power to move the needle. And so many people said, this would help us not be in debt. This would be amazing, right? But so many hospital executives said, you know what? That actually makes sense. I never thought that maybe we could have a sliding scale and people who make millions of dollars could buy in too and pay a little more than people who make, you know, minimum wage. So that's an example of it actually matters less where you fall on the spectrum if you are honest, open, and defend your positions and are willing to have that conversation with people, especially young people, people of color, folks who feel like marginalized within the political system because they don't see themselves fully represented yet, right? Women, LGBTQIA folks, right? If you are willing to have these conversations and show a genuine interest in moving the needle, you know, regardless of whether you're not an incrementalist, the folks in Wisconsin will say, we want to get something done for you. We want you to actually move the needle for us. And we care about what that looks like, but don't sell us out. What does sell us out mean? It's a question for another time.
Well, why don't you hang on and tell us right after the break. We're speaking with former state rep Katrina Shanklin, now executive director of a group called Rust Belt Rising. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. I'm Matt Rothschild along with my guest co-host Angela Lang, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show all across the Civic Media Radio Network right here in Wisconsin. Maggie's out today. I'm Matt Rothschild along with my wonderful co-host Angela Lang. It's been a privilege to be able to sit in for Maggie yesterday and today. Angela, it's always nice being with you.
Always, yes. Thanks always for having me. I always appreciate it. I feel like we have a good vibe going, and I love all of the guests that we have on and like the richness of the conversation.
Yeah, and we're thrilled to have still with us former Representative Katrina Shanklin, who's now executive director of a neat group called Rust Belt Rising. And right before the break, Representative Shanklin, you mentioned or alluded to, I think, the cynicism of a lot of people in politics and urging people, you know, please don't sell us out. So talk about that and the lack of trust that so many people have in politicians and in politics as usual.
Yeah, I think rightfully people recognize, as I said earlier, you know, 60% of folks across the country, Democrats, Republicans, independents of all races, of all backgrounds, believe that our political and economic systems aren't working for us.
And they're not.
You know, there's a lot. I was going to say, you could argue that's facts, right? Like, regardless of opinion, there are many different, you know, data points that we could use to prove that it's not working. And so if we want to recognize that and start with that as a fact and move forward, what does that mean? I think we need to recognize and, again, have humility that politicians are not trusted, right? People who are nurses, for example, are much more trusted by the public in polling data than politicians. Why? Because they've shown repeatedly that they care about you and that they're experts in their fields. People don't feel that way about most elected officials because they've seen, you know, so many scandals over the years, and they've seen people, you know, take them for granted. I think they've seen voters get scolded by politicians. Or, you know, one of my least favorite phrases is people aren't voting in their best interest. Well, who gets to decide what your best interest is? Right. You. That's, you get to decide. Other people don't get to speak down to you or tell you. I also hate the phrase uneducated. What does that mean? What does it mean to be uneducated? And who gets to decide that? And so I think that there have been so many politicians of different stripes over the years who have either made people, their voters, feel not only taken for granted, but even mistreated, like they aren't worth anything.
Yeah, this talking down to voters. Genesis. Is just,
yeah, the genesis of the distrust, especially after an election, the postmortem is always so scoldy and condescending. Instead of saying, you know, we're going to do a nationwide listening tour where anyone up without registering and tell it like it is, you know, regardless of party, we want to hear from folks. What do they need? What is the number one issue? What are the five top issues that they're worried about every night? And it's most likely going to be affordable housing, healthcare, the ability to buy basic goods like groceries, their energy bills, and, you know, public education or access to a good life-sustaining job, right? So that piece of that, if it's that simple, but people don't feel like politicians can fulfill those needs, they think, why even have a system at all? What's the point, right? And if they're operating in that, what's the point? Who are they going to choose if you get a tax cut or nothing? And from their point of view, they're going to choose the tax cut, right? So if Republicans are the tax cut party and Democrats are the party of we don't know how to define them, or, you know, I went to a meeting once and didn't feel welcome, then, you know, you can't blame folks. So I really think the onus is on people within the party and within, especially those leadership roles, right? Those elected officials to really listen to folks and help write, kind of set expectations better. It's on every elected official and every person running for office to tell folks why they should care and what they're going to do for them. Not the other way around, right? We shouldn't have to convince voters why, you know, you were right and they weren't. That's just not the way to do things. And so I do think that's part of it. And I think the other part is because we have such a fractured media now, right? And you guys are doing a great job changing that for us and having more opportunities for elected officials to speak. But, you know, you've seen, you know, since Citizens United, just a massive amount of money and attack ads and ways that, you know, especially Republicans and the far right have defined issues in such a way that's not only deeply dishonest, but is deliberately meant to sow distrust and disinformation. And so, of course, people are going to trust us less, even if we're operating in the best circumstances, even if we've never engaged in condescending tones or, you know, called somebody uneducated or said they're voting against their best interest. They're still going to be distrust, just like there are. Also, there's also a lot of distrust of public institutions right now. There's a lot of distrust of government in general. And so good politicians, good people who are running right now need to understand that and do the work. And I think it's community organizing. It's working with the groups on the ground that are already, you know, listening to folks and working in coalition on key issues, whether it's public education or affordable housing projects.
I just want to say thank you because this is music to my ears, honestly. And as you know, we live in two very different parts of the state, but a lot of what you're saying is what we hear at BLOC and what we hear in the Black community. And I think we see, especially when it comes to like Black men and why are they voting for Trump and this and that, there's a very real kind of overlap. And we kind of talk about this urban and rural divide all the time. And I think it's so important to find these intersections of where we can relate. Like, we all want that affordable housing. We all want basic access to affordable healthcare, which it may look different from a rural place versus like in Milwaukee, but we still want the same things. And so I just want to say, this is all music to my ears because I really hope that parties and Democrats actually take heed to what you're saying. And I really appreciate it because I think it's very rare for people to talk about how Dems need to act and listen with humility right now. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I want to thank you too, Representative Shankland. And we only have about a minute left. If people want to get hold of you or find out more about Rust Belt Rising, what do they do?
Head to rustbeltrising.com. You can sign up to join our cohort. They're free trainings every single week. We've got great folks set up through the fall to train you for free to help you reach a better understanding with folks and how to communicate.
Well, terrific. And good luck on your work. It's really exciting, I think. And I love the way you present these ideas real clearly for everybody to understand. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm one of your co-hosts today, along with Angela Lang of Block. And we'll be right back. And I've got bird song and a poem on the backside. So you're going to stay around for that. The poem will really grab you. I know it grabbed me. Hey, welcome back to The Maggie Dawn Show all across the Civic Media Radio Network right here in beautiful Wisconsin. Maggie's out today. I'm Matt Rothschild sitting in for her along with my terrific co-host, Angela Lang. We've been thrilled and honored to be able to be with you these last 2 days on Maggie's show. We want to thank Maggie for this opportunity, which we greatly enjoy. And God, I really appreciated the two political leaders we've had on in the last hour. Robin Vining was running for state Senate. And former state rep Katrina Shanklin, who spoke so powerfully about what Democratic candidates need to do here in the Midwest to really appeal to people. And the point about, you know, not scolding voters, not condescending to the voters, not telling voters what their actual interests are when they have their own ideas of what their self-interest is. I think those are all really, really important lessons, don't you?
I do. And I think also, you know, I appreciate them both very dearly. And I remember the first time, or one of the first times I started to get to know Rep Shanklin was, I was a part of United Council many years ago, and it was a statewide student organization group. And I felt like she was one of the ones in the corner of us, of like the student movement, understanding the student power and advocating for us. And I also think she's in a unique position as kind of the theme for today's show of being able to build upon kind of this grassroots, we don't have to be overly, you know, moderate in order to win elections. And I think both Rep Vining and former Rep Shanklin kind of prove that point, that you can be incredibly authentic as long as you're talking about, you know, values and what's important. And more people will actually support you than you think, and that we don't need to run away from these messages in order to win a statewide race or even a local race.
Yeah, be who you are, stand up for what you believe in. I mean, really, really basic stuff. You, if you're listening in your car or at home, you can join the conversation anytime by phone or text. The number for both is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Gary from Madison texted in, we've not had representative government here in Wisconsin for 15 years. Just insane, he says. And Gary's absolutely right. I mean, that story that State Rep Vining was talking about Speaker Voss, getting in the way of what a bipartisan majority of legislators wanted to do, which was expand postpartum Medicaid coverage for moms here in Wisconsin, was just kind of, I mean, almost shocking to me. I mean, I don't put anything past Robin Voss. Nothing he would do would surprise me at this point, but that is a really
the fact that it's
egregious
one
egregious example.
Yeah, and I think of going back to the redistricting fight and all of that, and I remember one of the talking points that we were trying to, you know, to make the case to the community is, you know, there are times that marijuana legalization has been on the ballot and it has passed overwhelmingly, or raising the minimum wage, or Medicare, like, or Badger Care. All these things have been on the ballot, passed overwhelmingly. Granted, our ballot initiatives are non-binding. I call them basically glorified surveys. But to know that you have a temperature on the electorate and what they want, and the fact that one man can say, I personally don't like this, so the rest of the state is not going to get that, is not only like disturbing, but it's sick and egregious. And it is a real, I think, cancer of our democracy. And I think that's strong language, but I use that intentionally.
And, you know, people understand at a gut level that democracy isn't working for them. It's not that they don't like democracy. They want democracy to work, but they know it's not working the way it's supposed to. And there have been a lot of political scientists studying this problem. Most famously, there was a couple of political scientists who did a study of 1,800 issues, political issues in Washington. And what they found was what the people want, the people don't get. the only time the people get what they want is when the top 1% wants it too. And that's for anyone who believes in democracy and, you know, thinks we live in a democracy, that's a real eye opener.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a reason why people are cynical right now. And there's a reason why people went for the demagogue instead of the institutional candidate last time around. And that's why, again, it was refreshing to hear former Rep. Shanklin talk about the need to acknowledge all these problems and learn from them. And Representative Vining talking about, you know, she wants at the break, and unfortunately people who weren't on the app or listening on Facebook or Twitter didn't hear, she's ready for a bright, shining new day. If Democrats get hold of the state assembly and get hold of the state Senate and hold on to the governorship. And it's that kind of optimism and the ability to deliver on those issues that she articulated so well that gives us hope. We've got, I guess, Dick from Cottage Grove is on the line. Always looking forward to hearing from Dick. Dick, what's on your mind? I can't hear you, Dick. Are you there? We can't get him. So, Jacob, we're going to have to try to have Dick call us back. And if he gets back on the line, we'll take it, of course. But, I mean, it's really important here for Democrats to recognize what happened in the 2024 election and to respond, because we lost the Rust Belt. And there's Katrina Shanklin, executive director of Rust Belt Rising. That's a crucial job. And you got to admire her energy, man. She brings a lot of energy and a lot of wisdom to this job, and it's just what we need. So hats off to Katrina Shanklin. As I told her once we were off the air, that I had a little Facebook survey of my Facebook friends who they want for governor, and she got several votes too, even though she's out of the legislature and not running. But I always thought she was a great candidate and a potential governor of Wisconsin at some point. Still do.
And I think it's also like where she represents too, right? I know, and you know, I've talked to several people about this kind of like Madison, Milwaukee, you know, when it comes to the gubernatorial race. And sometimes just even anybody being from Madison, Milwaukee can be a turnoff to folks because people feel that they're left behind in rural communities. And I think that she has a unique kind of like experience in the way that she's able to connect and to relate with folks. And like I said, there's not like a ton of representatives around the time many, many years ago when Scott Walker wanted to decimate the student movement here in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's something that I'll always remember of how she was able to try do the best that she could to speak out and to defend that. And so between young people, which I think is a big voting block and a big demographic, people need to, I guess, kind of figure out as we lead to the next cycle, but then also the rural community that has been left behind, and the fact that she has had experiences in both of those, I think puts her in a really unique and very powerful position to make a lot of plays in Wisconsin and also call the question. Like, I really appreciate the fact that she's talking about that, you know, the Democratic Party needs to lead and listen with humility. And I'm curious of, do we think that that's going to happen? You know, I have always seen the postmortems and the autopsy reports where it's always blaming the voter. It's, you know, it's never we ran a bad campaign or we had a bad message or we had a bad candidate. It's always the voter. And so it's refreshing to hear that, you know, the opposite. But I think the million-dollar question is, are the party, you know, are the party consultants and the candidates and the parties listening to that?
Yeah, I think that's really the open question of the day. We have a text from Tiffany from River Falls. It's not just Robin Voss, she writes. It's the Republicans as a whole. They had a chance to put it in the state budget, and they all voted no. Voss is just being the scapegoat for the Republican Party as a whole. You know, I don't really agree with that, because Robin Voss, you know, bossed around the folks on joint finance, the Republicans on joint finance. I think it is this handful of Republican legislators, Robin Voss and the folks on the Joint Finance Committee, including Howard Markline, who Jenna Jacobson's running against, they had the power to listen to the people of Wisconsin. And those few people chose not to listen to the people of Wisconsin. Yeah. Markline chose not to listen to the people in Richland County when they were shutting down UW Richland Center. Or Richland County. And so that's an outrageous misuse of the power that he has. And Robin Voss has just been flouting the people's will. I don't blame all Republicans as a whole. as Tiffany wrote, I don't even blame all Republican officials. I do blame the Republican officials who are in power, and I do want to underscore who they are serving. They are not serving the people of Wisconsin. They're not even serving all Republican voters in their district. They're serving the super rich, the Diane Hendrixes, the Dick Elines, and the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the biggest lobby in the state capitol, just a block away from here in Madison. And those folks aren't delivering for the people of Wisconsin. That's why our democracy isn't working here in Wisconsin. That and the huge Citizens United decision and the problem of money in politics, which is just outrageous, as we saw with Elon Musk spending $200 and some million on a race that he didn't even win here in Wisconsin. Yeah. But the amount of money that is spent is just a huge crisis for our democracy. Mm-hmm. This economy isn't working for everyday people. So we have an economy that isn't working for people, and we have a democracy that is not working. And the real answer is to get our democracy to work better. We got to solve the problem of campaign finance. But that's a long fight. I mean, we've got a U.S. Supreme Court here that has shown time and time again that they are, in league now with Trump. And also, you know, Chief Justice Roberts is the one who was writing that Citizens United decision. Yeah. And so we got huge problems on our hand as a democracy, which is what you and I talk about every time we're
on. Every time.
but it is so true. And here we have finally, you know, we have mainstream commentators talking about authoritarianism, talking about, when Trump fires the statistician from the Bureau of Labor Statistics because he doesn't like the numbers coming out. I mean, we are in real treacherous waters there. And yet, people, a lot of Republicans who voted for Trump, the vast majority, I saw, the polls, like 95% still like Trump. The question I'm having in my mind and having a hard time dealing with is, what is it going to take to separate themselves or acknowledge that they've been taken for a ride by this guy? We're not there yet. I mean, the Epstein stuff I thought was going to crack a few people, but I'm sick of that scandal. And I think it, even though there's movement in the House of Representatives to subpoena a bunch of people, I think mostly they're just going to go after Bill Clinton, and they're going to make it, Bill Clinton's a pervert, and try to take the blame away from Trump. But nothing seems to dislodge these folks at this point. Maybe when their economic conditions suffer. I mean, that's the bottom line. In fact, I heard Mark Pocan talking on the Tom Hartman show, I think it was last week, where he said, let's stop talking about Epstein and let's start talking about the big, bad, ugly bill that passed and how that's going to affect people, because people aren't going to vote on Epstein. People are going to vote on their everyday life. Sure. Is their life better? Is their economic condition better? Is their job better? Do they have better health care? Are groceries up or groceries down? Those kinds of things. And I think that was a really smart observation by my Congressman Mark Pocan. And I think we need to take that to heart, because, just chasing this Epstein story, like a lot of folks want to do, I think it's a cul-de-sac. I don't think it's going to get us anywhere. And we need to have conversations about the real issues and the crimes that Trump is committing against immigrants, against our Constitution, against due process, against our universities, against our media system, like we were talking about yesterday. And then we can maybe move people along. That's my hope anyway. After the short break, I've got this poem I want to read, and then I want to lighten things up and talk about some birds, which is my comfort zone.
Yes.
So we'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, guest hosting with Angela Lang of Block. It's always a pleasure to be with you on the Civic Media Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
There we go. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, all across the Civic Media Radio Network, right here in Wisconsin. Maggie's out today. I'm Matt Rothschild. I've been your co-host, along with my favorite guest co-host, Angela Lang. Today and yesterday, it's been a lot of fun, Angela.
Yeah, and so many good conversations. And just shout out to all of our guests, because I think this is why I love civic media so much, is that we're getting into the nuance, we're getting into the details. And I think it's such good conversations that are really important to have. And I'm always really grateful, to, especially with you, Matt.
Oh, thanks. And likewise. And civic media affords people the opportunity to have conversations. Yeah. We have, you know, our listeners can join at any time. And we don't just go after sound bites from our guests. We give our guests plenty of time to express themselves. And you don't get that on a lot of different stations. Yeah. You also don't get poetry on a lot of different stations. And I'm a big poetry fan, so I like to bring poetry and birds every time I'm on. And I found this poem. I'd never seen this poem before yesterday. This is a poem about Hiroshima, because tomorrow is the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. So I'm going to try to get through this poem. It's intense. It is, but it's not too long. It's called Let Us Be Midwives by Sadako Kurihara, a poet, writer, and peace activist who actually survived the Hiroshima bombing 80 years ago. So here goes, Let Us Be Midwives. Night in the basement of a concrete structure now in ruins. Victims of the atomic bomb jammed in the room. It was dark, not even a single candle. The smell of fresh blood, the stench of death, the closeness of sweaty people, the moans. From out of all that, lo and behold, a voice. The baby's coming. In that hellish basement, at that very moment, a young woman had gone into labor. In the dark, without a single match. What to do? People forgot their own pains and worried about her. And then, I'm a midwife. I'll help with the birth. The speaker, seriously injured herself, had been moaning only moments before. And so new life was born in the dark of that pit of hell. And so the midwife died before dawn, still bathed in blood. Let us be midwives. Let us be midwives, even if we lay down our own lives to do so. Incredible poem. Wow. By Sadako Kurihara, yeah, who died in 2005, but was there in Hiroshima on August 6th, 1945, when she was 32. You know, the Frankfurt School philosopher Theodore Adorno once wrote that after Auschwitz, poetry is barbaric. People sometimes quote Walter Benjamin saying no poetry after Auschwitz. I'm sure many people felt that way after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but sure. As Sadako Kurihara shows in this poem, there's always a need for poetry. There's, especially when it's so grim outside, there's always a need for art. There's always a need for altruism. There's always a need for community, always a need for hope. So I just loved coming across that poem, which I just Googled poems on Hiroshima and I found this, and I just couldn't believe it. It's so great. Yeah. I want to lighten things up a little bit with birds. And we got a text from Tom from Jackson. I still hear orioles and I still have rose-breasted grosbeak showing up in my feeders, he says. But a lot of the summer birds have left. I have a cousin up in northwestern Wisconsin who says her orioles have already left. And a lot of the Baltimore Orioles are leaving now. One bird that isn't leaving yet but will be leaving in the next 3 weeks is a nighthawk. And it's a misnomer. It's not even a hawk. This is a bird of the whippoorwill family that's a brownish bird, very slender, but almost crow size in length. And it's got a white patch. It's brown and speckled, and it's got a huge white patch on both of its wings that you can see. And they'll gather in groups over the next several weeks at dusk. So if you're seeing funky dinosaur-like birds flying in the sky, these are nighthawks. And this is what they sound like. Jacob, please play that. Just a little buzz. Yeah, it's so neat. So that
it makes me think of like a Muppet. Meep, yeah. Meep, meep.
Yeah, it's again, people don't know what they were. I was outside. I was in Iowa at a hotel, and it was dusk, and I was outside with a group of friends, and there were a bunch, must have been 15 or 20 nighthawks circling. No one knew what they were, and they were making this buzzing sound, and people thought, you know, are those giant bats, or, you know, what are those things? So, you know, yesterday we talked about chimney swifts, which are tiny swallow-like things. These are nighthawks, and they're pretty fascinating birds. They're going to be gathering in dozens and dozens over the next 3 weeks before they go all the way down to South America. So, it's something to watch out for. We got a text from Mark from Prairie du Sac. He's gone through far more suet and bird seed this summer than any winter he can remember. I've gone through a lot of suet too. I don't like feeding the squirrels suet, so I use a special kind of suet that's got cayenne pepper in it. It's peppered suet.
Yep.
You can find peppered suet at any bird store, and you won't be wasting it on the squirrels because, like most mammals, squirrels don't like hot pepper on their food. But the birds love it. So there's my suet tip of the day. Tom from Jackson texts right back. He likes the nighthawk sound. I love that sound.
Me too,
it's
yeah.
Really distinctive sound. So everybody out there, please look for nighthawks over the next 3 or 4 weeks, right at dusk in the skies here in Wisconsin. And that's about it for today. I want to thank our guests, Representative Robin Vining and former Rep. Katrina Shanklin. I want to thank the callers and texters. Got to thank Jacob, doing a great job at the controls. And Angela, especially, thank you. It's always kind of a thrill to be able to do this show with you. And, of course, we thank Maggie for giving us this opportunity. Seriously, I hope everyone has a nice night. Look for those Nighthawks. Mm-hmm. The ever-clever Peach Guava is next, so stay tuned on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.